Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
We thought the NCAA had just pretty much given up, but they're still there.
SI's Ross Dellinger.
That's close to the Coach O, where the Coach O's from, and the Cajuns on the P. Rolls, yeah.
And SI's Pat Forte.
Texas might be back. They've got a quarterback who's never thrown a pass, but he was highly rated.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. We got a poll, baby.
All right. Let's start arguing.
USA Today, coaches poll, the AFCA poll, whatever this, it's not AFLAC.
No, the American Football Coaches Association.
American Football Coaches Association. We have a poll. Breaking news. Alabama expected to be good. Came in number one.
Nobody saw that coming.
54 first place votes. 66 coaches. So we're going to do a little math here, and you're going to see where this is headed. Number two, Ohio State. 5 first place votes. Number three, Georgia, 6 first place votes. That leaves one more vote.
Where did it go?
Who got that vote?
Where?
Texas is back. The Texas Longhorns received a number one vote in the USA Today AFCA poll. Not Clemson, who's number four. Not Notre Dame, who's number 5. Not Michigan, who's number 6. Not A&M, who's 7. Not Utah, who's 8. Not Oklahoma at 9. Not Baylor at 10. Texas, who checks in at 18th with a number 1 vote.
With a number 1 vote.
If they don't have the number 1 vote, I don't know where they are. Will they lose 25 points in this thing?
Yeah.
Is that how it works?
Yeah.
So let's see. Let's say that coach left them off the ballot, they would drop all the way to 20th.
Okay.
I guess not that big of a drop. So it begs the question, and we're going to do a forensic audit here.
Oh, yes, we are.
Who the hell voted Texas number one? And I can tell you it was not Longhorn coach Steve Sarkisian, because he doesn't have a vote. So, Pat and Ross, I'll start with you, Ross. Is Nick Saban the culprit? Is he trying to rat poison Texas? And if not, who is?
Yeah, I know. I need to look at it. You've got it there in front of you. I need to look at this list to try to figure it out. But yeah, it's week 2, right? Alabama, Texas in Austin. So maybe he's trying to, ramp up the Longhorns a little bit. It's kind of like a media days, which has become like a annual thing, is that Vanderbilt gets a first place vote to win the SEC. I think it happened this past year again. And so we need to start. I think this needs to be an annual thing. One coach every year needs to vote Texas number one. In one of these years, maybe they'll be right. We'll see.
Yeah. Pat, is it Saban?
I'm looking here at the rest of the list. So like Neil Brown from West Virginia is a voter. He might have been trying to pump him up. There's got to be some other Big 12 voters.
Joey McGuire at Texas Tech.
Joey McGuire. There you go.
He Chris loves all things Texas. That's what we're told. I don't know if he loves the Longhorns, though.
Chris Kleeman, Kansas State. So, no, I'm going to – like. Yeah, I think it's Saban. I think it's Saban. I think we have our man. As somebody who coined the phrase rat poison for excessive and undue praise of a team, by golly, I think this has his fingerprints all over it.
I'm looking at the list now, and there's a few guys in here that I could totally see voting, voting Texas number one just to give fodder, like as an absolute joke. You know, I could see some guys with a personality. And I wonder, I do wonder if that's part of what's happened. Literally somebody is just completely joking, just wanted to make some fodder for us. And they got it. Look, we're leading the show with the Longhorns. There you go.
All right, here are some candidates. Lane Kiffin is not a voter. We can take him off. He has a good alibi. Excellent alibi.
So this does Mike Leach. I did a search for Leach. It's not him.
Not Leach. This could be like Murder on the Orient Express. Like all of them did it. They just they put like Dana Dimmel up from UTEP or something. No one will suspect you. Or I don't know.
There's another Dana that votes in. I'm just saying, yes. I could see him. It's just ha ha ha. Let's get the Longhorns number one and see what they say.
Or he got a little like his mullet was just flapping around in that Houston wind, and he just let it all go. Possible, very possible. Other candidates, we have Kirby Smart from Georgia. Maybe he's a little bitter at this whole Arch Manning thing.
Whoop. Hey.
We're going to question that. Certainly a possibility there. It could be Jim Mora voting for UConn. Jim Mora, we had the controversy during the offseason. Does he know who shot Tupac? Remember that?
Yes.
There was a question that he had told the recruit that he knew who killed Tupac. He has now declined that, but maybe he knows things that others don't know and Texas really is on the verge of something. He denies knowing who shot Tupac. He probably would deny voting Texas number one, but Jim Mora, you're in the spotlight here.
Seer, Savant, yeah.
Could be, I don't know. Pat Narduzzi from Pitt, he's rattling fences lately.
Yep. Yeah, that was one. He was on my list of possibilities with Dana, for sure.
He's got a little sass to him, just to mess around. That's a funny one. Paul Crist would be the least likely to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you gotta focus on that, too. You can't get okey-doked here. Saban, obviously, with the rat poison, but Saban is such a quality control guy. I don't know that he could pull it off. I think at the end, he'd be like, I can't. They're not number one.
I'd be violating the process if you do that.
You know what? We should be studying the list of these coaches' SIDs who do the voting. What SID is the connection to Texas or think it would be just funny to do? Because I bet half of these coaches didn't even touch their rankings.
I don't know. Like preseason, they might.
Maybe.
They definitely don't during the season.
No, it's terrible. I mean, point. I would love to see, is it literally, does it just come across the desk and do they take 30 seconds, go, yeah, it looks fine? Or do they actually study it for 2 or 3 minutes or 5 minutes, change some things around? Or do they look at it even at all? I don't know.
Someone is messing with Texas.
Yeah, lot of their opponents have voters in this. They play four in a row who have voters. Alabama, UTSA, Jeff Traylor, Texas Tech, West Virginia. And then they also got Kleeman and Lance Leipold from Kansas. They both vote as well. So,
Sam Pittman at Arkansas, the Hogs have always got something against the Horns.
Always, always.
That's a long... I mean, this is truly messing with them. I mean, this is hysterical. This is the horns down version of a vote.
But
Hugh Freeze at Liberty.
Yeah. Couple of guys who coached with Sark at Alabama have votes. Butch Jones, Arkansas State. He was on the staff there, I think, with Sark. Mike Locksley. Mike Locksley might have left, actually, and then Sark came in. So
yeah, he replaced him, I believe.
Yeah.
Yep.
Many, many
the mystery wrapped in a riddle.
Anyway, we'll see. Maybe Quinn Ewers gets more money from NIL if he gets a number one vote. Who knows? Is there a bonus? Like, what if there's a bonus in the structure? You get one. I get, I'm Sark, I get an extra 50 grand. Remember the old UConn deal?
Yeah, exactly.
Randy Etzel, right?
Randy Etzel.
I'll split the deal with you. Mm-hmm. You get 25, I get 25.
If you're Sark, yeah, you got a 50,000.
Vote me in, who cares?
Yeah, you call whoever, somebody on the list here and say, yeah.
All right, rest of this poll, top three of the top three. Everyone thinks they're the top three. Get asked who's going to make the playoff. I think everybody says those three. Bam, Ohio State, Georgia. It's a little depressing on a season. We'll see if there's any shakeup, but the battle is for Ford. Who in this poll, doesn't even have to be who can get to the top four, but what stood out to you, either good or bad, in this poll? I'll start with you, Pat.
Well, okay, good, because I've got a little blind resume test for you here. Okay, we're going to compare two teams. Okay, one team went 11-3, Power 5 conference, played in his conference championship game. The other team went 5-7, lost 6 in a row at one point, clearly did not go to a bowl. The 11-3 team has 13 starters back, 7 on offense, 6 on defense. The 5-7 team has 7 starters back on offense, 7 on defense. The 11-3 team has its returning quarterback who threw for 4,200 yards and 39 touchdowns back, and a receiver who caught 71 passes for nearly 1,300 yards and 15 touchdowns. The 5-7 team has a quarterback who's never thrown a college pass. They do have a receiver who caught 980 yards worth of passes. They have a very good running back. Knock on the 11-3 team was that its defense wasn't very good last year. They've got 6 stars back, but they gave up 28.9 points. The 5-7 team gave up 31.1 points. You guys tell me which team is ranked higher.
I'm guessing since we're doing this exercise, it's the 5-7 team, which I'm still trying to figure out who that is.
That would be the boringest exercise ever if you were like, yeah. At the end of that, you're like, the 11-3 team's ranked 8th, and the 5-7's not ranked. They didn't get any votes.
Obviously. No. What I'm setting up is my own outrage here about
these go for it.
Stupid polls and the incredible laziness and brand name relying, the myopia of these voters. 18 is Texas, who went 5-7. 19 is Wake Forest, who went 11-3. But it's Wake Forest. And so everybody, they're only Wake Forest. Oh, but Texas. Texas might be back. They've got a quarterback who's never thrown a pass, but he was highly rated. They've got a coach who everybody thought was an offensive genius, even though they went 5-7 last year. The other team, which averaged 41 points a game, has the real offensive genius coach, Dave Clawson. But they're Wake Forest. Do you think Wake Forest would ever be ranked the year after going 5-7? Hell no. But Texas, it's Texas. Look at that Longhorn on the helmet. Horns up. Bevo.
Yes. The beauty of college sports, right? The big brands, the big names, the colors, the logos, the mascots. Oh, yeah.
It's unbelievable. Why would anyone vote for Texas? They may end up being good. Maybe. But why? Going in right now, much less voting them number one. But even if you take that out, the fact that they'd still be in the top 20 or 21, I mean, why?
What if it was Dave Clawson who voted them number one?
Maybe
it
was.
Bumped them ahead of Wake.
Maybe. It's like, this is what happens to Wake Forest, and this is what happens to Texas, and this is why polls are stupid. And we do this every single year. Here we are.
Why do we do it, Pete? Because the fans and readers love it, man. I can't imagine the clicks that old USA Today is getting on the poll. And we're sending them more, too.
Yeah,
I was excited when it came out. I'm not a curmudgeon like Pat. Who cares? Pat flipping out over who's 18th and 19th in the poll.
When Texas is 18th, I'm flipping out. It's ridiculous. Get them out. Come on. I mean,
Ross, what surprised you today? We'll let Pat have a moment.
Every freaking year.
He needs to unwind. I'd take a breath.
He needs a timeout for a second.
I don't know that I was surprised, but how would you like to be Marcus Freeman? Second game of your career? Or no, first game of your career, right? Is at Ohio State.
Coach the bowl.
Yeah. That's right. So second game of career is, your team's at Ohio State. In your team is, in Ohio State is number 2. In your team is number five. So your first season as a head coach, your expectations are to finish the season basically undefeated or with one loss at the very, very worst. So that is a I'm trying to think of a first year coach at any program that has faced those expectations. I'm sure there's been that. And I'm just kind of going over my head really quickly. Y'all might have a better idea, but a first year coach that is whose team entered the season, you know, in the top five, that would be an interesting one. But that the expectation level for Marcus Freeman, whoo, good luck, buddy.
Well, and not only that, they're going in with a quarterback in it's presumably Tyler Buchner, who hasn't played or has barely played. It's not
doesn't,
like they're doesn't returning.
Matter for Texas.
Quinn Ewers. Also,
Tyler Buchner was not the number one recruit in the country either.
No, he wasn't.
It's not like they're bringing back like Ian Book for his third year as a starter, right?
Yeah.
And you go, all right, I got a pretty good idea of this kid, who this kid is. He's going to be pretty good. He's not going to be great. But they're not even bringing Jack Cohen in from Wisconsin. They have Tyler Buchner probably as the starter and then possibly Drew Pine. Wait, they're bringing in a new quarterback and a brand new. Now, they have some offensive weapons. They've got a great defense. They've got some good running backs. But yeah, this is a ton put on Notre Dame. Number five. I'm with you. The basic thing is you want to know about Marcus Freeman at Notre Dame, Dan Lanning at Oregon. Let's see, who else is starting brand new? Brent Venables at Oklahoma. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah. So you have those three. They're all in the top 10. Can they coach?
Right.
We don't know.
Right.
They can all recruit. They're all recruiting great. Oregon's 12th. They're not in the top 10, but they're 12, not Oregon's 12. Oklahoma's 9. Notre Dame's 5.
And then Southern Cal, too. 15.
15, but we know he can coach. He's coached.
Yeah.
These are guys that have never been a head coach. So we know Lincoln Riley can coach. You don't know until you know. Some of these guys obviously turn out to be unbelievable, and some of them don't. So you have no idea. That I think that's a tremendously – it's a tough one. But then again, you look at the candidates, and you go, all right, is Michigan 6? Like, are they going to be good enough? A&M's kind of young. Clemson obviously has a chance to be really solid in that fourth spot. And I think – I would not be surprised if the playoff is the top four. But I agree with you. Notre Dame – but we do not know what Tyler Buchner can do, and he's going to get broken in the horseshoe.
Yeah, see, I think, to me, Notre Dame at 5 is emblematic of the fact that I don't think anybody knows what to do from 4 through, like, 10, you know? Yeah. I mean, Clemson, okay, yeah, a lot of good players coming back. 2 new coordinators, and they were not great last year, and there's question whether DJ Uiagalelei is really the guy. Notre Dame, we just went through the questions. Michigan lost a lot from that team. Texas A&M, super, super young. Utah, some key parts coming back, but also Pac-12. Should a Pac-12 team be as high as 8? I don't know. Oklahoma, Lincoln Riley left and took everything but the hoo-hash. Baylor, like very few starters back from last year's team. So you go down to like, when I was filling out RSI top 25, I was like, I don't like anybody from 4 on down.
I think if you look at the top 5, there's a familiarity there, right? It probably speaks to the lack of parity right now in college football. But outside of Oklahoma, I think those 5 have advanced to more CFP championships than any other teams. They probably make up around 75%, 70% of the actual appearances in the CFP, those 5
victories.
Yeah. Yeah.
Alabama, Ohio, I think they have Georgia. All the victories except Oregon.
Yeah.
Oregon and LSU.
That yeah. LSU. LSU and Oregon.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Probably LSU so. Won 2, Oregon won 1. Other than that, every yep. game has been won by those
yes.
4.
State of college football. And we're always looking coming into the year on who's going to challenge the top group. And I think it's probably not, you know.
No one.
Yeah. Maybe not. I got my eyes a little bit on the Aggies. We'll see. Maybe it's too soon. Maybe it's a year too soon. But I'm always looking at who might challenge that group at the top.
I would have put Utah 5th.
Yeah. I think I agree.
I think at least you know what Utah is. You know that schedule. You know that they could get to that fifth spot and possibly into four. Very, very solid team. You just saw them go toe-to-toe with Ohio State. And yeah, Ohio State is Mississippi, wasn't Utah. So, you know, I think I would probably have put them at fifth. I mean, Notre Dame's going to be in your top 10. To me, you just have a total wild card at quarterback. It's the most important position, and yeah, no one's really sure.
Well, and a wild card at coach, you know?
And you got a wild card at coach. So we'll see. Two thoughts I had is one, NC State at 13, which I think is perfectly legitimate, maybe even too low. Devin Leary is going to be, you know, had an incredible year last year, 3,400 yards passing, 35 TDs and just 5 interceptions. You know, he has a chance to give them the kind of pop they need. Dave Dorian, he just builds good programs. And so is this like that breakthrough year for NC State? I think that's a big question. So them sitting at 13 is nice. And that's a team I think people should, that's a team that earned that spot. You're not getting, no one's just sitting there saying, where do we rank NC State?
Right.
Can't now go that, too far.
I agree. I think NC State and Wake Forest both should be, either one of those should be the second ACC team rank. And you could put them in either order. It'll be fine. It's another reason why Wake Forest at 19 just mystifies me. But they're both teams, good teams with really good coaches who have built them over the long haul and have a lot of people, good players coming back from good teams. So I would look at both of them and say they could be top 15. They could end up in the top 10.
Who outside of the top 10 makes the playoffs, if anybody? Who do you think? Who's the best possibility? I'll spoil it. Pat, you know, in the magazine, we had to do our pick our playoff prediction. I picked Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson, and USC, which I'm not feeling real good about, but they come in at 15.
I mean, that would be spicy. That would be fun.
I mean, you got to look conference-wise. It's like A&M's got to get it's just a tough go. I mean, obviously someone from the Big 12 can make it. So whether you like Oklahoma, Baylor, or Oklahoma State, they're all sitting there as pretty talented teams.
What about Texas, Dan? What about
Texas? Of course, they're not. I'm sorry. Texas number one, of course.
You want to know a little more Texas stat for you? This is the sixth straight year they've been ranked preseason. They're like helium. They're inflated. I mean, you can't not rank them. During those 6 years, 7-6, 10-4, 10, okay, they were legitimate then. 8-5, 7-3, 5-7. So,
I'd buy stock in LSU. LSU's sitting at 30th in this poll, in the others receiving votes section.
Right.
First year, LSU hadn't been ranked since 2000. And of course, two years ago, it was the first year they didn't make a bowl since 2000. Nick Saban's first year. Crazy.
They've got players. And they've got a coach. I mean, I'm not saying they're going to win the SEC and win the national title, but that's a top 25 team, I would think.
Yeah, you could see them go like 8-4, 9-3 for sure, and finish in the top 20 or so. Yeah,
I don't know. I wouldn't rank LSU, but I wouldn't be shocked to see them. I think they'll be better coached, better organized, but I don't think they have great talent right now. A lot of question marks. They're on a very, very tough schedule. I kind of like Tennessee at 28, and I like their schedule to get off to a good start. 6 of their first 8 games are at home. Would not be shocked to see them coming into November at like 7-1, losing to Alabama, but maybe winning the rest, and then playing Georgia and maybe getting a reality check there. But I think the stage is set for Tennessee to be one of those teams we're talking about mid-season as one of the surprise teams.
No, they were pretty interesting opening few games, right? They play at Pitt.
Yep.
I believe. Yeah, they play at Pitt, and then week 4 they host Florida. So yeah, we'll know about the Volunteers pretty quickly. I agree though. I actually he's stockpiling talent over there in interesting ways. Obviously they have one of the bigger NIL collectives, and they are racking up, it would seem.
So LSU gets Florida State that first weekend. That's going to be a fun game to watch. Like, cause there's just questions on both teams, both programs, you know, for an unranked game.
Right. And that's that Sunday standalone game. So
it's a Sunday. I thought it was Monday. Yeah. Sunday standalone game. pretty interesting. Now everyone will overreact to like who wins. It'll be this great game, and then both teams will stink. But I don't know. I mean, that's in New Orleans. I expect LSU to win that game, and then they got Southern, Miss State, New Mexico, and then they're at Auburn. That Tennessee game in October could be big, and they play. Then they host Tennessee.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, we like what Arkansas is doing. They got more names coming back and all that, but they're sitting at 23. I don't know if that, you know, do you really think Arkansas is going to have a better season than LSU?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. We're going to find out, I guess. We will. I do think Kansas State is a sleeper.
Yeah.
They have an excellent offense. They only got 4 votes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They got the Adrian Martinez transferring in. It's just, the question with him, do you get the full Adrian Martinez experience, which is a lot of great plays and then a lot of really bad plays and turnovers that make you lose games? Or is he, you know, does he get a little better taking care of the ball and maybe flourishes there? And that could be a difference maker.
I think him and Deuce Vaughn running the ball together.
Right. Really good running attack.
Kleiman also, I mean, I think he's proven it, but he seems like he can coach pretty well.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely.
So that's it. Yeah. Oh, Florida State got 1 vote in the poll.
They did. Yep.
Somebody put him in.
Big game for Norvell. That first, you mentioned that Sunday night game against LSU. Gosh, that feels like that just feels like one of those games, right? Like a make or break. Like you're at the end of the season, you're retained, or at the end of the season, you're not retained. Kind of game for him, kind of season for them in general.
Yeah. That's,
I think too, on that is how you look. I mean, if you start, if you lose to LSU in the Superdome, and you come back, but man, you can lose your team quickly. Felt like, you know, they lost Travis Hunter to Jackson State, the number one recruit in the country last year, and the last minute he flips to Jackson State. And I know it's one player, but man, that just felt like, man, this is no bearing on how hard the players are working or how talented they are, but man, that was a tough one for the mood of the fans.
Yeah.
Old Dion gearing up to maybe make a move with Hunter and others to Tallahassee. Who knows?
Yeah. You think Dion signed a lot of good players. He hasn't just signed one guy.
Right.
I mean, you think Dion will be, let's say a year from now, are we talking about Dion at an FCS? Or an FBS, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think we are. I think we are. And I would have probably said that last year too, and here we are, we're not talking about it, but he got pretty close last year. I think he, you know, he interviewed for a few jobs, and actually a couple of athletic directors were pretty impressed by him. So I think this year, you know, they got the best talent in the SWAC, obviously, by far. They probably got the best talent in maybe all of FCS. He's got a bunch of Power 5 transfers, so I think they win, you know, another 10 games, and yeah, I think maybe this is the year that not only he gets another job, but probably takes a few players with him from Jackson.
Yep. Yeah. As you alluded to, I mean, people in Tallahassee are starting to cast a bit of a wistful eye towards Dion. Beloved alum, and took the best recruit in the country away from the Noles. And if Mike Norvell doesn't do well, Dion's going to be standing there on the doorstep.
So, okay. So I mean, they won 11 games last year, 9-0 in the SWAC, 4-3. They recruit. He's a big personality. Is he only, like, everyone's like, all right, he coaches Florida State one day, but what if that doesn't open? Like, would Auburn grab him?
Maybe.
Will someone else take? I think he'd be really good. And closer he gets to Atlanta, I mean, Auburn, man, that's kind of his spot, right? Like South Alabama, the Panhandle, all of Florida, Georgia, in and up in Atlanta where he's a hero. But I don't know, like, would he even go for that? Is he, I mean, what a soap opera that thing would be.
Yeah, that's, how would the boosters feel about Dion? How would Dion feel about the boosters? Because as we know, the boosters have a pretty loud voice down there. But that would be a fascinating situation to watch. But I agree with Ross. I think Dion is absolutely ticketed for FBS and possibly even Power 5 and possibly the SEC. So, yeah, that's Auburn's one of those you look at for sure.
Yeah, so, like, who else?
Well, let's think of, like, most likely to open. Nebraska, I don't see that him going there.
No way.
No.
No. No.
God, I wish.
Yeah. it would be hilarious. Like, one of the most buttoned-up programs in the world, and Deion Sanders. Memphis could open. What if Memphis has Deion Sanders and Penny Hardaway as their coaches? Memphis.
He's got it better.
Well, maybe.
You think he would wait for something better? But then again, man, he's been interviewed at some kind of lower level jobs that I think that I get the feeling that he just, you know, wants to get an FBS any way he can. Yep. But yeah, maybe he waits, you know.
Yeah. I'm not sure he's in a mood to wait. But I think like South Florida, I think, is probably poised to have a much better year under Jeff Scott and kind of make that step forward. Mm. But if they don't, USF, Tampa, ability to recruit there.
How about out west? How about in Arizona State?
If Herm, Arizona State, I was just thinking that.
Yeah.
Yeah, if Herm, I mean, that's a big
try everything anywhere, else.
I think Dion anywhere in or very much near, right, a major metro is the thing that would make a lot of sense outside of Florida State. Anywhere him in a big metro city, I think it makes a lot of sense. Like a Houston, not that anything's gonna happen with Dana, but you know, Houston, even Dallas, you know, he interviewed last year. I think he's pretty well known at TCU.
Yep.
And although that school wise seemed like maybe a peculiar fit, like the fact that he would be in the Dallas Fort Worth area. I think he's got a house there. It made a lot of sense. And I think he blew away Jeremy Donati, the AD there. They really thought about seriously offering the job. And they had Sonny Wright kind of waiting in the wings. But if they didn't have him, you kind of wonder if they would have.
Yep. Here's him. One.
So any big metro like Phoenix, I could see that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Georgia Tech.
I was just going to say, Atlanta.
Georgia Tech.
I mean, that you want to talk about a job that has a very high likelihood of opening. That would be one.
Right.
I'm not sure Dion is a Georgia Tech guy, but, you know. Yeah, have him come in and say, yeah, we're going to go get like 8 great players out of Atlanta right now. Watch me.
Experience with Dion is he will surprise you in a lot of ways. And so, you know, the fact he's done this much at Jackson State that quickly, I mean, you know, signed the number one recruit in the country last year.
It's got a great position.
And a number of other, he had a couple other 4-stars and he's getting commitments now. And he's incredible. Arizona State to me would be fascinating for him because Arizona State's constantly looking for like something to matter, and they just need to get a beacon that gets kids out there to visit and be like, hey, maybe I'll go there. Well, Deion Sanders on the phone. I'll go take a visit. And then once you get there, you're like, I'm not leaving.
Yeah.
He would be very interesting. And I can't see him at like one of these, like you said, like Nebraska, some corn town somewhere.
Yeah.
Like,
and if Ray Anderson remains the AD, I mean, he's an NF guy with an NFL background, and he likes big names. You know, he liked having Bobby Hurley as his basketball coach. Yep. Liked Herm, you know.
Yeah.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
All right, big story out of Norman, Oklahoma, late Sunday night. Cale Gundy, brother of Mike Gundy, who's obviously the Oklahoma State coach. But Cale Gundy was a star quarterback at Oklahoma and has spent, I think, the last 25 plus years as an assistant coach with the Sooners. Basically, when Bob Stoops came in, he was their wide receiver coach. He released a statement late Sunday night where he resigned from his job. And said, I'll read his statement that he put out on social media. I owe it to Sooner Nation to be transparent. Last week during a film session, I instructed my players to take notes. I noticed a player was distracted, picked up on his iPad, and read aloud the words that were written on his screen. The words displayed had nothing to do with football. One particular word that I should never, under any circumstance, have uttered was displayed on that screen. In the moment, I did not even realize what I was reading, and as soon as I did, I was horrified. I want to be very clear. The words I read aloud from the screen were not my words. What I said was not malicious. It wasn't even intentional. Still, I'm mature enough to know that the word I said was shameful and hurtful, no matter my intentions. The unfortunate reality is someone in my position can cause harm without ever meaning to do so. So he apologized and then and resigned and went on to talk about how much he loved Oklahoma. I read that and said, I want to hear more of the story. We've gotten more of an update on Monday from head coach Brent Venables. And he said this, I would like to, a few things I want to address. Coach Gundy resigned from the program because he knows what he did was wrong. He chose to read aloud to his players, not once, but multiple times, a racially charged word that is objectionable to everyone and does not reflect the attitude and values of our university or our football program. This is not acceptable, period. Coach Gundy did the right thing in resigning and so on. So I think anybody who took a little time, I know that's not big on social media and the media in general now, a lot of reaction, but mistakenly reading a word once, not saying you keep your job, but it's once, saying the same word multiple times is a different story. So really kind of a, I know he's not the head coach, but kind of a coaching legend at OU. Is out. Your thoughts on that, Pat?
Yeah. It's significant. Coach Cale Gundy was one of those sooner born, sooner bred guys that they talk about and had been there going back to Venables' time as an assistant coach with Bob Stoops and obviously through with Lincoln Riley. And so for him to step down is a big deal. And the additional context offered by Venables, I think, is instructive. And the tone from Venables makes it clear. I think that if Cale Gundy didn't step down, he was going to step down. He was going to be pushed, and maybe that's what happened here ultimately. But you know, the first thing that Venable says in his statement is, as painful as it has been dealing with Coach Gundy resigning from the program, it doesn't touch the experience of pain felt by a room full of young men I am charged to protect, lead, and love. So right then and there, it's like, okay, we're not having a pity party for Cale Gundy, okay? Secondly, then, yes, some context and maybe a little more clarity and truthfulness about what happened from Brent Venables. Look, there are words you cannot say and you should not say. Clearly, Cale Gundy said it, and not once, but multiple times. And here in 2022, as a college football coach, this is what you get. I don't want to hear people moaning, oh, cancel culture, oh, this is ridiculous. If you don't know that as a football coach, you're ignorant, okay? You should know that that's kind of the situation that you are in, and that's the environment you're in, and be respectful of that environment. So for Cale Gundy, you know, it's the end of a long and storied and beloved career, but I think it should be.
Well, and we at first, right when this came out, Sunday night into Monday, you kind of heard that the backlash of the moaning of the cancel culture and stuff like that. I think part of why you heard that is because this story didn't seem right. Something seemed like something was missing. There had to be more to the story. And then, right, little by little, the truth is coming out that it wasn't more. He didn't just say the word once, that he said the word multiple times. So I think, I don't know what happened with his statement and why his statement was kind of inferred or, you know, suggested that he read it almost by accident one time. And then obviously Brent Venables came in to clear up and offer more information. And obviously when you're speaking to, you know, a room full of athletes and say those things and knowing you have to go on the recruit, right on the road and recruit and knowing your own players talk to recruits. I mean, that's not a good situation. And for everybody, a split was probably necessary there.
Yeah. And who knows? I mean, we may get more context from if there are sides to the story from all the different sides. And that's the thing. I mean, this initial statement is one person's statement.
Right.
Yeah. You know, is there a full, you know, investigation? I don't think Oklahoma is going to do that, but or maybe they will. Who knows?
But well, the one thing we haven't heard from any of the players who were in the room.
Yeah, we have not heard from the players, and we don't know what other attitude is. And it's a new coach, and it's a lot of different things. So
a lot of former players coming out, interestingly, who weren't in the room, right, coming out in support of him pretty passionately. So that probably is part of what sparked, I guess, Brent Venables to release his statement, because there was a loud push from his former players who came out, you know, in support of him.
Right. Who love him. He does have his support out there. So a lot of different angles on that. You know, we thought the NCAA had just pretty much given up, but they're still there.
every once in a while, they do something.
I mean, it's literally like they're all like everyone's calling it the Wild West, right? I don't mind the Wild West. I love Westerns. But everyone would agree. And then every once in a while, here comes the NCAA like finding some rule. So Drew Singleton was a linebacker for Rutgers. And last year, has a good season, decides he's going to turn pro. That would have been his fifth year, but he gets a sixth year, right, because of COVID. Gets an extra year. He's going to sign, turn pro. After the season, Rutgers goes 5-7. He signs with an agent and plans on going pro. Then Texas A&M catches COVID and bails on the TaxSlayer Gator Bowl. And the TaxSlayer Bowl tabs Rutgers to come in at the last minute and play Wake Forest to save the TaxSlayer Bowl. Okay. So
I know Singleton, that pulls at your heartstrings, Dan, saving the TaxSlayer Bowl.
It really does. Yeah. It really does. So Singleton decides he will play in the game. He plays for Rutgers, but it hurts his ankle in the game, which then kills his draft chance. He's not a guaranteed draft pick, right? So he's in a walking boot. He can't go through the thing. He goes undrafted and says, now I want to come back for my last year. And the argument is, yes, he signed with an agent, but it was before that he thought the season was over, and then the season really wasn't over. The NCAA, so they were looking for a sixth year out of Singleton. And the NCAA just ruled this week that he is out. He cannot participate. There's like maybe one more appeal. Greg Schiano is not happy. So kind of crazy, but do you feel sympathy for Singleton? Should he be able to continue playing given the bizarre circumstances of he didn't know when the season was really over?
Yes, I do feel sympathy for him, you know, and it is so purely like the NCAA that it does seem like they hand out waivers like candy, and any sob story will work, and you can transfer as many times as you want, that sort of thing. So where, you know, that it seems like a disconnect here. A couple of things I will say, though. You know, one, this was, he sprained his ankle. Is that really going to knock you out of the draft if you sprain your ankle in December? Or January 1st or 2nd? I suspect that his draft status was not great to begin with.
It was not.
Yeah. So I just have a hard time believing that this was the kind of thing that all of a sudden torpedoed his draft status. Secondly, I've seen people say, well, the NCAA wants these guys to play in the bowl games. No, the NCAA didn't give a crap. The TaxSlayer Bowl wanted him to play in the bowl game. Rutgers wanted him to play in the bowl game. So this isn't an NCAA wants him to play but then punishes him for playing. It's just the NCAA punishing him for playing. Again, you would like to see them back up all the rhetoric about, hey, you know, we are in it for the athletes and we want them to have the best experience they can have. And this doesn't seem to jive with that. But I would also like to see, read, hear whatever the final ruling is on this waiver before I know exactly what the heck the decision was about.
Well, this is a great example, and we have plenty of them, of this weird era that we're in college sports right now. We're like transitioning from amateurism to professionalism, but we're not all the way into professionalism, and you still have some of these little rules. I mean, at some point, whether through Congress or the courts or their own volition, college sports' own volition, this is going to be legal where a player gets the inner draft and come back. You know, and players have agents now anyway. I mean, yeah. You could say they're just supposed to have just marketing agents, but they have agents now anyway with NIL. And let's just be frank, they've probably always had agents, especially the high up guys. I mean, they always probably had agents. So it's like this, again, we're, and there's a lot of examples of it. We're in this weird time of college sports where college sports still has clinging on to these these little like amateurism rules, and still in some cases like this one, enforcing them, but not enforcing others. So it's just a bizarre time. And it's another example of that. It's sad for the kid. You do kind of feel for him in kind of his family that, I mean, what's it going to hurt, you know, giving him another year? So.
Yeah. I mean, it's it. If they were hardcore, like they used to be, you could sit there and say, look, the moment you sign this, you sign with that agent, let alone take money, you know, you're out. But nowadays, everything's so confused. I don't know. I mean, the NCAA definitely does not care about a bowl game. Nobody cared about the Tax Slayer Bowl. They were 5-7. I guess the only part of it is the confusion of your season's over and then it isn't.
Yeah.
Because of bizarre standards. That's about the only one. But, you know, Rutgers will survive. But
as you said, though, it's a good good to know the NCAA is still in business.
Still doing something, I guess. Yeah. This seems like a weird one to be like.
They haven't put on that.
Rutgers linebacking core isn't quite as experienced. I mean,
they haven't put that, that villain hat on for a while. So they've just been steamrolled over in every situation. So now, hey, what do you know? They're still at least capable of pissing off a fan base out there.
This does not apply to me, but I do think it might apply to you guys, certainly Pat. Some days at work, you just don't put in a good effort, and you try to present that you did. Right? Just try to present that you did do a lot.
This doesn't apply to you. We did hear that correctly.
Does not apply to
me.
We
heard
that
right. 100%.
Okay. Yeah. Winning the day. Win the hour. Win the hour, baby.
Win the day.
Win the day. All gas, no brakes over here. But for the rest of you slackers out there, you have a hero. Etienne Klein is a scientist and the director of France's Atomic Energy Commission. And Mr. Klein put out on social media a photo and claimed it was from an image from the James Webb Space Telescope. Okay, this is all astronomy or whatever. It's not astrology, astronomy. I don't know a whole lot about it. I got enough problems here on Earth. But a photo of Proxima Centauri, the closest star to the sun. This is what he wrote. Located 4.2 light years from us. She was taken by the James Webb Space Telescope. This level of detail. ... A new world is revealed day after day. And this was a very impressive photo. Except actual scientists started balking back, and it turned out the photo was not an image from outer space, but a photo of a slice of chorizo.
That's just my favorite.
This is a true
thing.
Story,
That's
by the
awesome.
Way.
That's so awesome.
The man took a slice of chorizo. Tremendous. Took a photo of its bright red, has all those little dots and stuff on it, like when you see Saturn or something, and pawned it off as whatever the hell I just described. The level of detail. He's like, just amazed at how great this photo is. Is this one of the great, I didn't do any work today, but I'm going to pretend I did work ever?
It's pretty impressive. It really is. If he only hadn't oversold it, you know, I mean, in the social media post there, it's a little, you know, a little too effusive. He just said, interesting picture from space of Proxima Centauri or whatever, instead of a whole new world discovered. But can't you picture it? All right, this dude's French, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah, he goes to lunch, they have a bottle of wine, they're having a charcuterie plate there, and he holds up like, hey, you know what? Let me use this piece of sausage right here. Take a picture, and then we're done for the day. We'll have another bottle of wine, we'll hang out, post it. Genius, just he pushed it too far. But, you know, that's sometimes the criminals do that, or the scam artists, they push it a little too far. Catches up with you.
He said after, when he got the blowback, it was just joking. I feel compelled to clarify that this tweet showing an alleged snapshot of Proxima Centauri was a form of amusement. Let us learn to be wary of arguments from authority as much as of the spontaneous eloquence of certain images. He writes like a Frenchman. why would someone in authority try to undermine authority? I don't buy that joke bit at all. This guy was trying to, like you said, he's getting hammered down the little, one of those little cafes they got in Paris.
Now I'm calling to question all of the images that came out of the satellite. Are all of them weird food? These galaxies, these universe, whatever pictures. Maybe, you know, it's just like some kind of cereal or granola or other sausages. I don't know.
What? Yeah, what if the whole Hubble telescope thing's a scam? You know?
I encourage anyone to look it up. I mean, it kind of does look like a planet for like idiots like me. But then they're like, oh, it's chorizo. You're like, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I can see that.
They kind of do look alike.
Put it with a slice of Emmental on a cracker.
All right, finally here, LSU may not be ranked. No respect for Brian Kelly. But we continue to respect the fishermen and fisherwomen of anybody from Louisiana who gets out there and fishes. We've had many, many stories about Louisianians and the wildlife, and this one goes right in it. Just last week, the Louisiana Department of Wildlife and Fisheries arrested a Houma man for, quote, allegedly catching too many sharks and having meth in his possession. You just never know where you're going to get out there.
You get down to, that's South Louisiana, is it not, Ross Dellinger?
Oh, that's way down there.
That's down in the marsh.
That's close to the Coach O, where the Coach O's from, and the Cajuns on the Piros. Yeah,
we coming.
Yeah. Those people down there, man, a different breed.
The agents came up on his boat, and they got suspicious when he was on the boat, and he threw a shark overboard because he was over the limit.
I'm just trying to imagine that it's hilarious. This guy's like throwing sharks overboard, like grabbing them by the tail and throwing, you know, their jaws are, you know, going, and he's just throwing them overboard. That's amazing.
And I don't know. I'm not an expert on the waterways there, but I have been there, and it's like a river. I mean, it's not like you have a huge boat.
No,
like you're out
right.
In the Gulf. So he's probably got a bunch of sharks flapping around in his boat, his small boat. Realized he'd taken too much and literally picked a shark up and threw it overboard. And then they get him with the meth.
Then the meth, you know.
Yeah, then the, yes, yes.
That's a double whammy right there, man. Yeah, Houma, that is down there. On the fishing trip that Dan was notably not invited on, we did have somebody from Houma that was in our group. And
I was born in Morgan City about probably 30 minutes, 45 minutes to the west.
Yeah, of, you know that territory.
But
you ever thrown a shark overboard?
No, never. No, never done that. And sharks and meth? No, never done that meth? Either. But I can imagine a shark smoking meth. That might end up as Sharknado. That might end up Sharknado 2 coming.
Yeah, Shark Week just got new material.
There you go.
Sharks, if my job is to literally put my hands on a shark, like manhandle a shark, I'm taking meth. I think I think there should be a carve out on whether it's illegal or not.
Justifiable meth use right there.
Yeah. Well, he's in the jail, $5,500 in fines and 2 years in jail. It's what he faces. So he tried to dispose of the evidence by throwing the shark back. Don't tell me LSU's not going to be in the top 25 when this is who they're representing.
Yeah, there's a good chance that on his body somewhere or on his boat, he had purple and gold somewhere.
Yeah.
There's a really good chance.
Oh, hey. Our guides, when we went on the fishing trip that Dan Wetzel was not invited on, were hardcore LSU fans. And, man, they were down on Coach O big time. And that was before the season, before he got fired. I mean, they wanted him out.
Oh, the Tigers.
Yeah.
Coach O could have wrestled that shark. We also had that deal with Jim McElwain.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
the Jim McElwain lookalike on the when he was touchy the Florida
subject
coach.
For Jim McElwain. Touchy subject, is. As we found out. Yes, he's he not didn't happy. Play into that. Man, I'm still like, man, he missed a perfect opportunity to like play into that and be, you know, be funny and just kind of like make fun of himself. And boy, oof, he went the other way. And then so did the coaching career at Florida.
Yes, yes.
The Jim McElwain. If you don't recall, there was a photo of a guy who looked like Jim McElwain. He's now the Central Michigan coach, but the former Florida coach, cuddling with a shark on a boat.
Naked.
Naked.
Naked. That's true. He was naked.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't know if cuddling's the right word, but
you know.
Kinda, he was right? Hugging,
he was lying down naked with the shark. So, I mean, you know.
Embracing longingly the shark. Yes.
Yeah. The picture got out there. And he really got upset about it. I mean, and it was kind of that was made you wonder if it was him.
Yeah, no, I mean, because
it was so absurd that the Florida Gator coach would be nakedly snuggling a shark. Yet. But if you don't recall, they then did an investigation. Barstool, of all people, Barstool got into it. And they did a huge investigation, and they found the guy who actually was the Jim McElwain lookalike.
The shark
and,
cuddler.
He admitted it was him. And so McElwain was cleared of the naked shark cuddling, and it seemed like it kind of gotten over it now. So new era there. Fire up Chips.
Central Michigan, if he's going to cuddle with anything, maybe like a lake sturgeon or something now, you know.
Not a lot of sharks in Mount Pleasant. Not a lot of sharks. He went about as far from the sharks as you possibly could in Division I football. Maybe like a walleye or something. I don't know. Won the Sun Bowl last year. They won the Sun Bowl.
Sure did.
Not a lot of sharks in El Paso either. So, you know, who knows? Who knows? Let's see where it goes. But anyway, I think that's a sign that LSU is going to have a season for him. But we'll be here to chronicle it. We'll be back later this week with whatever else happens. Talk to you later.